Welcome to a Prevent Connect podcast, where we explore the prevention of violence against women. This is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault.
Hello, this is David Lee from Prevent Connect, and I am pleased to be able to speak with Dr. Elizabeth Miller from the Department of Pediatrics at the UC Davis School of Medicine. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, David.
You have recently published an article in the journal Contraception called Pregnancy Coercion, Intimate Partner Violence, and Unintended Pregnancy. It's been e-published, and it will be released in the April 2010 issue of Contraception. And I think it's a really interesting article because you're talking about reproductive control. It has a lot of implications for those of us who are doing prevention work around issues of dating violence and sexual violence. So Liz, can you talk a little bit about what this study was about?
I'm going to back up a little bit, David, and tell you kind of how we even got to this study in the first place. And I'm going to actually start with my own sort of personal story into this work of teen dating abuse as a physician who takes care of adolescents and young adults. Kind of a personal confession in that about 10 years ago, I was working in a teen clinic on a Thursday evening, and a 15-year-old girl came in for pregnancy test, which is pretty routine adolescent care. And her pregnancy test was negative. I spun around and I said, "So, what are you using for birth control?" And she looked at me and said, "Nothing." And I said, "Oh, well, here are all your options." And like so many of us in the field of medicine, very quickly assumed that it was a knowledge deficit and that she just needed to be educated on her contraceptive options. Somewhere along the way, I asked her if she felt safe in her relationship and got a shrug shoulder and a whatever. And I handed her a brown bag full of condoms and sent her on her merry way, and telling her to come back, that I was there every Thursday evening and she could come back any time to discuss birth control with me. And 2 weeks later, she was in our emergency room with a severe head injury, having been pushed down the stairs by her boyfriend. That was one of the most destabilizing experiences of my clinical career. I really wanted to figure out what we could do better as healthcare providers in clinical settings to understand this phenomenon of teen dating abuse. What could I have done differently that evening? What were the clinical red flags? And certainly, what does this mean for preventing this kind of violence? And what's the role of the clinician? I then sort of launched into a lot of descriptive work, which involved doing both qualitative and quantitative work while I was still working in Boston. And one of my sort of first studies was doing in-depth interviews with young women who were known to have been in abusive relationships. And so they were referred to me by counselors and mental health folks and domestic violence agencies, but they were all known to have experienced some form of dating abuse, and specifically physical or sexual violence at the hands of a partner. And as I was doing these interviews, and I ended up doing about 60 of these very in-depth stories, about a quarter of those girls described active attempts by their male partners to get them pregnant. So I heard stories about condoms being removed during sex in order to get her pregnant, breaking condoms on purpose, flushing birth control pills down the toilet. And these young women were firmly convinced that their partner was actively trying to get them pregnant. They would say their partner said things like, "Honey, we're going to make beautiful babies together. I want you in my life forever." Which I think I was so struck at the time by how confusing that was for a young woman in terms of her desires for a pregnancy. And certainly some of the girls described how they would hide birth control from their partners because they really didn't want to get pregnant. Another handful were very ambivalent about getting pregnant. And another third who said, "You know, well, he wants me to get pregnant, so I wanted to get pregnant too." That phenomenon of sort of birth control sabotage, and a term that we then sort of started to call reproductive coercion, was one that I really wanted to look at more systematically. With my move out to California, I had the incredible privilege of partnering with the Planned Parenthood Shasta Diablo affiliate in Northern California, along with the Family Violence Prevention Fund, to really think about how reproductive coercion fits into our understanding of partner violence, and also how this knowledge could help clinicians do a better job, including helping to prevent unintended pregnancy and, of course, reducing harm in the context of an abusive relationship. So we embarked on this study in five clinics in Northern California. And the young women were ages 16 to 29. They could be walking in for any reason to Planned Parenthood. Obviously, the most of the reasons were reproductive health related. And all we told them is that we were doing a study on women's health and relationships. Women who were interested in participating took an anonymous survey that was done on a computer. So it's very, very private. We asked a lot of questions around physical and sexual violence, and then a series of questions around birth control sabotage, which we define as being active interference with one's contraceptive method. And then another series of questions around pregnancy coercion, and those kinds of questions are like your partner threatened to leave you if you didn't get pregnant, or he threatened to hurt you if you didn't get pregnant, told you not to use any birth control. So that sort of the combination of birth control sabotage and pregnancy coercion is what we term reproductive coercion. And what we found from this study of 1,200 plus women was that their experiences of partner violence were stunningly high. So 53% of the young women coming into these clinics reported having ever experienced physical or sexual violence at the hands of a male partner. And a whopping 25%, a quarter of the women, said that they had experienced reproductive coercion. What we then found in terms of looking at how those intersect is that among the women experiencing partner violence, about a third had also experienced reproductive coercion. So there's a significant overlap. However, the other piece to point out is that about 7% of the women in our sample had only experienced reproductive coercion, but no physical or sexual violence from an intimate partner, suggesting that there are a handful of women who are at risk for pregnancy who may not necessarily recognize reproductive coercion as unhealthy or abusive behavior. So the piece that's obviously tied to clinical outcomes is that what we found, very consistent with prior literature, is that experiences of partner violence were associated with unintended pregnancy. We also found, no surprise, that reproductive coercion is associated with unintended pregnancy. What was very interesting and what we were able to do with this study, though, was to look at that interaction. And what we find is that for the risk of unintended pregnancy, it is the combination of reproductive coercion and partner violence. And by that, I mean physical or sexual violence from a partner. It's when you have those in combination, your risk for unintended pregnancy increases twofold. And so reproductive coercion is clearly an important component. Assessing for partner violence is clearly an important component, and you kind of have to do both. So that was really the finding from this study. It is, you know, obviously limited by being from 5 family planning clinics in Northern California. Do I think it generalizes to family planning clinics across the country? Probably, in that the demographics and kind of the reproductive health needs are very reflective of what we see from other studies and other family planning clinics. And I think, you know, there's lots more work to be done to look at how common this phenomenon of reproductive coercion is, you know, across population-based samples.
Well, you know, I found it to be a really interesting study because it explores an area that we haven't discussed enough in those who are dealing with the issues of dating violence and sexual violence. But it's very clearly a dynamic of the pattern of control that people see. Now, the implications that you talked about were implications around clinical practice, but let's think about prevention. And how do you see this is related to how this can affect how we approach our prevention work?
Absolutely. So I think, you know, so for a moment, I'm going to focus that answer on the clinical setting, because I actually do think that the clinical setting provides an amazing opportunity to do prevention work. And certainly, you know, this work on reproductive coercion points directly to preventing unintended pregnancy, but it offers an opportunity for clinicians to be actively involved in prevention of partner violence as well. And I do think that clinics are under-recognized as places to do this kind of public health education. And what we have found with our sort of subsequent, you know, work with developing interventions to address reproductive coercion, that many women are happy to take the information when we say, you know, this may not necessarily be relevant for you now, but we suspect that there is a friend, somebody you're close to, who you might benefit from this information. And what we have found is that many women actually ask us for, you know, multiple copies of the information cards, because they go, oh my gosh, all of my friends could use this information. And so I do think that clinic settings are a really important place to do to do the health education around reproductive coercion and partner violence. But I do think there is this more sort of bigger question about what are the implications of this study for our work on reducing unintended pregnancy in this country. And I think the need to bring reproductive coercion into the conversations around pregnancy prevention is huge. Now, I think one of the most disappointing for me as a public health researcher is the extent to which the pregnancy prevention world and the sexual violence world have not been communicating. There are studies that have recently come out looking at adolescent and young adult pregnancy intention, and there is a concept that is often discussed as pregnancy ambivalence, that young people are not sure about and confused about whether they really want to get pregnant or not. What is very disconcerting is that none of those studies have actually incorporated questions around partner violence. So we really don't know the extent to which that what we're reading and seeing as ambivalence is in fact being influenced by the partner's intentions around pregnancy, the partner's behaviors, including physical and sexual violence. And so I'm hoping that this concept of reproductive coercion can become a wedge to really bring those two worlds of pregnancy prevention and sexual violence together. Because really, we have now two decades of literature on the links between partner violence and pregnancy. It really is about time that we're doing some very serious prevention and intervention work that says we understand that sexual violence has a huge impact on a young person's risk for unintended pregnancy.
Well, it is interesting because where you conducted your research, because actually when I was working in a domestic violence agency in that community, partnered with Planned Parenthood to address some of the issues and integrating abuse issues into the work that Planned Parenthood was doing, and did a lot of work in the community of really talking about those links. So it's a really great opportunity that I think we haven't taken enough advantage of. In Prevent Connect, a lot of our work has been focusing on primary prevention and how mm-hmm. we can be able to change some of the root causes of violence and be able to really address the significant risk and promote the positive protective factors that can be able to prevent sexual violence or intimate partner violence from happening in the first place. I think your study creates some opportunities for us to be able to think about this in a new, broader way.
In terms of primary prevention, certainly comes down to what's the message for young people, what is the message for our communities that are working on reducing violence and sexual violence in particular, and how does this sort of new information around reproductive coercion influence that? It comes down to what many of us have talked about before in terms of the promoting of healthy relationships and what is involved in terms of the multiple ways in which we need to shift social norms and attitudes around healthy relationships. And I think that one of the pieces that's becoming very clear to me is that we need to be more explicit, because right now our primary prevention work is kind of in this nebulous place. Do we really know? Are we really clear with our young people about what a healthy relationship looks like? And it's clearly a relationship that's violence-free. It's free of any coercive behaviors, but it's also one that promotes one's reproductive autonomy. What that sense of your body and decisions that you make about your body are yours to make, and how to bring that into the conversation of healthy relationships, I think is one that we can all really think creatively about. And I really would like us to see us talking more about coercion and reproductive autonomy as part of the recipe of healthy relationships.
Promoting reproductive autonomy is indeed primary prevention of sexual violence and dating violence. And that's, I think, a really exciting concept. Obviously, there's many challenges in communities throughout our country where they don't want to be talking more explicitly, but your research really does give a direction that we need to be able to consider as we're developing our primary prevention efforts. Thank you very much. I really appreciate taking the time. You're, I know, doing a lot of interesting research, and we'll be checking back in with you, Liz, on some of your other research and projects that are being done to be able to address health impacts and how it's related to dating violence and sexual violence. So thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this Prevent Connect podcast. Prevent Connect is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. To learn more about Prevent Connect, visit www.preventconnect.org. For more information about CalCASA's mission or to show your support, visit calcasa.org. That's CalCASA.org.